Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile, and they've got something that baseball fans are going to want to hear about. Right now, T-Mobile is giving customers a free MLB TV subscription. That means you can watch tons of games live or on demand in HD. Get all the baseball you can handle and access to America's largest and fastest 5G network with T-Mobile. Visit T-Mobile.com/MLB to score your free MLB TV by April 5th. Qualifying customers can access the T-Mobile Tuesdays app to sign up for MLB TV. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Awarded fastest 5G by Open Signal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, January 2021. Details at T-Mobile.com.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 171. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll talk about the final rosters being set. We'll each give one bold prediction for the 2021 season, talk about the White Sox in this season, talk about the Royals coming up, and we had a poll question about which pitcher will have the lowest ERA among the AL Central pitchers. We excluded Shane Bieber for obvious reasons, just to, you know, make it fair, but we'll talk about that. And potentially, this is our last episode of Let's Talk Tribe, which we'll talk about what that actually means and what that means going forward. But joining me for all that and more is then Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
That's right, I'm retiring. That's right, everyone. Me, the anchor that holds this whole thing together, is retiring to Boca Raton.
It's actually going to be called Let's Go Boca Raton from now on.
It's called Let's Go Rat Mouth. It's Rat Mouth Talk or something. That's what Boca Raton
yeah, it's...
Right. I'm well, though. Thanks for asking.
No problem. I think we should just start with that. Big retirement tour that we're going on. But
it's going to be great.
The real reason is we figured, so if you're listening to this podcast, if you download it in the morning, I'm assuming right away, I'm sure I schedule it for like 3 a.m. I know people are waiting until 3 a.m. They just want to listen to our smooth voices guide them into the morning. But if you're listening to this podcast early in the day, you probably haven't seen yet that the website's changing. Let's Go Tribe will no longer be Let's Go Tribe after today. I think they're flipping the switch on SB Nation's side sometime around like 3 p.m. So everybody listening now gets it a little earlier. Which is kind of fun, but I figured we'd let people on the podcast know that a change is coming first if you want to feel special and know that the website's changing. Obviously, since that won't be the name anymore, our very unfortunately perfectly named Let's Talk Tribe, which goes so well with the site name, will no longer work. So we're going to have to think of something with our new site name. I can't quite tell you what it is yet, but you'll see soon if you're listening to the podcast. If you listen late, like after work or whatever, you already know the new site. But yeah, it's an exciting day for us at Let's Go Tribe, or insert new site name that I can't say here, but we're gonna have a new logo, new website, new Twitter, new podcast, all that fun stuff.
And we're never going to acknowledge that the change happened. So this is the only time we will do it. It's just how it always was, everyone. It's just it's called gaslighting. And I've been reading about it a lot. It seems like a great thing to do to people. And I think we should do that. So
yeah, that's actually the new name of the podcast, Gaslighting, the Gaslight Hour, where we just don't acknowledge old things.
Write that down. That's a good one.
I will say that while we were going back and forth with names, I still love your idea for Height Club. It doesn't work, I don't think, for a baseball puck, but I love the idea of just having a podcast just about tall people for tall people, because we're both over, I'm 6'8". I don't know. I think you're like over 6'6 or something.
I'm 6'4".
Right?
I wish it was
Oh,
6'4".
You are off the hike. Never mind, man.
This is bullshit.
Wow.
6'8".
You are off the Height Club. I thought you were taller than that, but wow. All right.
I'm
going to be solo hosting a podcast called The Height Club, where we disparage people like Merritt who are not above 6'6".
Oh, it's 6'6" now? This is bullshit.
Where we reach things on high shelves, we talk with our microphones up very high, and Merritt just...
You know, I do have a long wingspan. I can pick off anything off a shelf you can. Look at this. You can see me reaching. It's so high. I'm touching the ceiling now. Now I'm touching the floor without even bending down. This is crazy.
Well, there you go. But yeah, so we'll have a new name. It probably won't be the Height Club, especially since Merritt has betrayed me and it is not actually tall enough.
You're the betrayer.
As far as on the field stuff, I don't think the deadline has passed where they've officially had to say who's done what so far. But we've seen that Andrés Giménez impressed Terry Francona and everybody. He was pretty much a shortstop. Outfield's getting weird out there. Bradley Zimmer was optioned. Of course, that's after Daniel Johnson and Oscar Mercado were both optioned as well. So it is barren out there. It is Ben Gamel and, I don't know, Ahmed Rosario and sort of Jordan Luplo in the outfield. We can start with position players. We'll talk about pitchers in a minute. But it's weird. I think everything else sort of fell into place the way we thought it would. I mean, obviously, like catcher, second base, third base, the corner outfield spots. Once we knew that Josh Naylor was going to be the right field, all of that was pretty much locked down and made sense as it was. First base was a little weird. I think people got caught up in the quote unquote position battle of spring training and Bobby Bradley and Jake Bowers, but Jake Bowers wasn't going anywhere. If he didn't make the roster, they'd have to DFA him because he's out of options. They just weren't going to do that. So I think it's always been sort of guaranteed he was going to last. But he's the first baseman now. Bobby Bradley was option as well. So we've kind of have what we're going to be looking at least for opening day. This is not going to be a roster that everyone starts 162 games, but at least for opening day, we sort of have what we'll see in the lineup.
Well, yeah, apparently there's an extra 40-man spot. So we'll find out what turns on with that down the line. But yeah, to your point, I mean, everything was kind of outside of the Bradley Zimmer thing, which was really weird because the outfield now is just, as you put it, strange, I guess.
Well, at least center field. I mean, Eddie Rosario in left makes sense, and Josh Naylor, if they're doing that, that makes sense in right field. But
nerve-wracking, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Nerve-wracking and frustrating because now we're going to have a converted shortstop and a right fielder playing center field. So, but like we talked about last week, it's like they just don't care about outfield defense, which, again, doesn't make any sense why they're ostensibly putting Ben Gamel out there, depending on who starts on opening day. But I'm not happy about it. I'm not sad about it. It just is what it is, I suppose. I don't hate the lineup. I don't love the lineup either. So it's a very much a middle-of-the-road set of emotions I'm dealing with right now.
and it's not like Ben Gamel's like 90 years old. He's also kind of young. He just hasn't been very good. So I think it was just weird that I knew Oscar Mercado once he lost the job. I thought it was pretty much Bradley Zimmer's at that point. I thought they were saying like Mercado lost it, but Zimmer were at least going to give him a chance. Because at this point, if Zimmer doesn't make it this year, what is he going to do? Like he has options. He can be optioned back and forth. But I mean, after this, if he couldn't make it with this team, I don't see a way he sticks around anywhere. He can't be like a fifth, fourth outfielder, pinch runner guy. I get that he's fast, but
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he could be trade bait at some point. I just don't know who would want him. Like we saw Adam Plutko as somebody I guess we can talk about pitches now, but at least got the curveball. He would have been somewhere in the bullpen, but Cleveland did end up trading him to Baltimore for just cash, which is essentially useless if you're a fan. Like, it doesn't affect us at all.
Thanks, dude. Yeah. Thanks for all those cash I don't get to have. Can I have some cash? No. Oh, all right. You know,
it's weird because they have that roster spot, too, that they hold on to him and send somebody down. But
right, they just need an extra $180,000 or whatever the heck he costs. It's weird. There's only, I just noticed this, three former first-round picks on the projected 26-man roster. Which, I mean, we're going to get to in a few minutes, but you look at other teams like the Royals or especially the White Sox. I mean, they are mostly former first-round picks because it just stands. I mean, obviously, with international guys, you don't have a draft. But even with that, Bowers is a seventh-round pick. Roberto Perez, 33. Ben Gamel, 10. Just very interesting where Cleveland was able to find their talent, I suppose. It's something that just popped out to me just randomly right just now. But other than that, you know, it's
– I would think that's a thing for teams who – like Cleveland, they get a lot of players who trade. Like, I assume if you're building through the draft and tanking, you probably have a lot more first-round picks. But Cleveland, they find these guys, like, I guess, Ben Gamel, sort of. But also, like, Eddie Rosario, they sign late. And I guess their pitchers they develop, but like, Logan Allen, they got from San Diego, who came from Boston. They have all the relievers are pretty much all from somewhere else besides Karinchak. And
yeah, that's the thing. Like, two of the three first-round picks are both guys they traded for. So it's just like...
Well, sure, yeah.
very interesting way to put together a lineup. I mean... You know, it takes all kinds. It takes all, you know, comers and whatnot. But this is the one we get to deal with. You know what? I'll say this. It doesn't make me feel as shitty as last year's opening day lineup. And I think that's that two years ago, I suppose. A 2019 lineup.
Just the Mets lineup, is it like?
Yeah, because that was
the only thing I think of when I think of 2019. Is
exactly. Eric and the other guy who also looks a lot like Eric Stametz. So that collection of random, like, I don't know, just like central casting type he just pulled who are barely below replacement level, and they just kind of had him there for a few weeks.
And that was also partially because Lindor was injured. That kind of threw a wrench in everything. Which,
oh, exactly, yeah. Everything was a miss that entire season. But yeah, no, so here we go. I guess this is the one we're going to go to battle with, and we'll see how it goes. Apparently, the Tribe 21 outlook is we're going to surprise you.
Yeah, I just saw that was, I think, Mandy Bell wrote that today, right? That's their... I would expect them to say nothing else. Like, if they aren't front runners, that's what you have to say. I'm sure the Orioles are even saying that we're going to surprise people, because it's kind of just what you have to say. But I think Cleveland could legitimately surprise people, especially these people that feel like the Royals can beat them. Like I've seen there some places that the Royals might be third in the AL Central.
Or no, I think stupid.
Cleveland can way outpace that. But
yeah, I mean, like I'm looking at, like, there's guys on here too that I'm just like, I mean, if I'm not feeling optimistic that day, I mean, I'm pretty positive about, honestly, even all the way down to Jake Bowers. And I don't know, eventually it's going to click. I keep on telling myself. Josh Naylor, I mean, he hit a bomb a quarter mile the other day. So more of that, please. So I can talk myself into pretty easily, quite honestly, with you, man. An effective lineup, if not a great one, like we're going to get to, like with the White Sox theoretically. But just, you know, I mean, I think they could do some things. 90 or so wins. Why not? Why not?
Weirdly enough, it's Eddie Rosario that wasn't a huge signing for most teams, but he's the one who I think kind of makes the lineup more tolerable. Like if they didn't sign him, this is ridiculously bad. But just with him there, like the fact that center field and even first base can sort of be a black hole potentially, either all season or just right away before Bowers and or Bradley fail and then Nolan Jones is there or whatever. But I mean, Eddie Rosario helps stretch the lineup so much because he can bat second. The way Fangraphs has him now is Cesar Hernandez, Eddie Rosario, then Jose Ramirez. I mean, I think I'd like Jose second and then Eddie third, but I guess that's, it doesn't matter that much. But I mean, it's at least four decent hitters they can have, five maybe if Josh Naylor can live up to any kind of potential. And Andres Jimenez, we'll get to our bullet predictions in a minute, but I think he'll be a decent enough hitter, and he's down at the bottom of the lineup. So it's definitely not the worst opening day lineup that we've had.
No, I've lived through some shitbag lineups. So, you know, this is
we've lived through worse, Merritt. That's the real slogan for 2021 Cleveland baseball.
That make us feel better about stuff. Sure.
We've been through worse. Yeah.
No, this is, it's fine. And if they can just create a league average at, you know, offense, which, and I think they can, quite honestly.
Yeah, all they really need is just an average lineup because of what they have pitching-wise. I mean, even we've seen the top three are pretty much locked in, which we already knew, that Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale, Zach Plesac, in some order, are going to be the top three. It's kind of interesting that Logan Allen is the number four. They don't need a fifth starter for a while until April 11th. So for the first couple weeks, they're going to be using just four. And what it sounds like they're doing, they told Logan Allen he's going to pitch in the fourth game of the season, which he'll either be a starter or there could be an opener like Tristan McKenzie opening for him, which I would assume that's partially just to save McKenzie's arm specifically and also just save innings for everybody altogether because of the weirdness of last season and you're ramping up to a full 62 games this year and you kind of want to save stuff. But Logan Allen's one of those guys who I didn't think he would be a starter coming out of spring training, but he just pitched so well. And I don't think it's just because he pitched well in spring training. I think they've always sort of eyed him as a starter, but he did enough to tell them that they're okay with it and they want to keep him as the starter. He's the only lefty starter, as much as that matters, if it does. But
to me, it does. As a left-handed person myself, it's nice to finally have representation.
You're a lefty and you're under 6'6", man.
You know what? Go to hell. If I'm being quite honest,
we're learning a whole bunch of stuff today.
I've always been very upfront about my left-handedness and also the fact that I'm tall and lanky. You know, like we can't all be behemoths, all right? Man the size of a Goliath. Jesus Christ. I think the thing you should do with Allen, too, is it's weird to say this. He doesn't profile as a relief pitcher because I just don't think he has anything that's overpowering. And, like, would you rather have a shitty a guy who doesn't have any two killer pitches or a guy who can just kind of throw one of four things pretty well? And, I mean, that's what we're going to get out of Allen. He's not exactly, you know, Patrick Corbin, who can do anything. I'm using him as a good example of a great starter lefty who also went to the pen, obviously, during the playoffs. But Allen is not that kind of guy, I don't think. Also, he's young as shit, too. I forgot he was under 24. But it's, you know, like you said, he pitched very well in the spring. I mean, as much as those at-bats and stuff don't really matter, especially for hitters a lot of times, like, I think for pitchers, you can start making judgments. And he is one guy who I think even a couple years ago we were kind of excited when they got him. What was it, I guess last year, 2 years ago?
2 years ago. The Bauer trade,
Bauer trade? Okay, yeah. We were excited for him to enter the, you know, the Cleveland pitching factory and see what came out the other side. And maybe we'll have something here. We had the same conversation around Aaron Civale over the last couple months. So why not Logan Allen too, right? I mean, this is be the first time they turned a lefty into anything since, what, Cliff Lee maybe? But
something like that, yeah.
I'll take it, baby, yeah.
If they do anything with Logan Allen, that would be, I think, probably their biggest turnaround for a player. Just looking at him, like, he always walks a ton. He doesn't strike out a lot. Like, his strikeout rate has gone down every level of the minors. And last year he was, in 10 innings, but he struck out not even 6 per 9. The year before that, when he was in 27 innings, it was still under 6. So he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. Like you said, he doesn't have overpowering stuff. So if they can turn Logan Allen into, like, some amazing starter, like, more than just...
Yeah, I mean, his projections are dog shit, obviously. 5.11 ERA, what is that, 21 games started, 108 innings. So that's 5 innings to start. Like, you know, I mean, you read about it everywhere. It's just like eventually it has to run out, and eventually they're going to stop being able to turn guys into something. But like, Plesac looks great, and he was a 12th round pick. I mean, Savali looks great. You know, Shane Bieber looks great. Like, he was a 4th round pick. Why not? I don't know. Why not? As I've said before, until it doesn't work anymore, I'm just going to keep on giving the benefit of the doubt. And it seems like of all people for it not to work on, it's going to be either one of Cal Quantrill or Tristan McKenzie, maybe, just because, I don't know, maybe it won't. And those guys are first round picks, which would be kind of funny.
It could, with McKenzie, it feels like it could just be that it just can't because
a sheer of physicality type. Thing.
Yeah, like yeah. It doesn't matter how much they, because I mean, they've built him up with the tools and everything. He's got a good changeup. He's got a good fastball. But if he just can't keep the velocity up and he just can't stay healthy, then it doesn't matter what they do for him. But I think Cal Quantrill, especially, he's a guy who I still think he's going to finish with more starts and innings pitched than Logan Allen. I know he's starting in the bullpen, but I still think Cleveland thinks pretty highly of him. Just looking at his stuff and his slider sinker ball combo, I think he can be good, especially with their infield defense they have. If they brought Cesar Hernandez back, they're going to have infinity in middle infield. Yes. Like if he can get ground balls more than he has in the major so far, I think he can be somebody who sticks around as a starter for Cleveland. Obviously not like a 1-2-3 guy, but they don't need that. It's just another back of the end guy. I think he'd be better than Logan Allen at some point. And I mean, my dream rotation is still to have Bieber, Plesac, Savali, and then McKenzie and Quantrill, but I'm sort of slowly drifting away from thinking of McKenzie as a permanent starter. I'd love him to be one, but I just don't know if this is going to be the year where we find out, I think, if he can be. Like, if they...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're even if they start chance. Him slow, yeah, as long as they give him the chance, like, halfway through the season and let him keep getting the innings, if he proves he can do it, then you're good to go. But if not, then I think we have an issue going forward. But
I mean, he's
going
to get minimum 10 starts, and I think it won't be just spot starts. I think they're going to give him a run there. But if he just, you know, falls off over the course of a month or so, then I think that'll just tell us a good story. But again, he's also, you know, not super old. He's only about 23. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing too. You look at guys who are built like him who do hold on to velocity in the seventh and eighth innings and win Cy Young awards too. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. Maybe it's just because he's too young right now. 23. What was I doing when I was 23? Garbage. Lots of garbage. So, you know.
Basically, I wasn't throwing 97 miles an hour, so I can't judge what Tristan McKenzie is doing.
I'll say
I was
that.
Just about
close.
There. You know, I was in the lower 90s. I wasn't quite up to...
Well, you know, Chris Sale wasn't a full-time starter until he was 23. So all I'm saying here is that he's going to be that Chris Sale. So
there you go.
There you go.
Keep the scissors away from him.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It depends on if the uniform forms are shitty or not. That's what's important here.
So, Merritt, let's get to our always the best part of before every season is making any kind of prediction going forward because we're always so right at it. Like today, I sent out for everybody on the staff to do their staff predictions for the season. So, I figured we can do a shorter version of that, which is jumping over all that boring divisional winners, whatever that stuff is. Just make a bold, weird ass, wild prediction. It's sort of our meatball ish for the preview. Just what's your one bold prediction for 2021 Cleveland baseball?
Oh, for the baseball team. Oh shit! I thought we were doing something else entirely. Oh man, I was gonna learn how to make French bread. I think Jake Bowers is gonna hit 25 home runs.
Oh my god! Is that like every pitch he swings at, he just manages to hit 1,000 feet?
I think he's gonna have a good year. I don't know why I think this, but maybe it's because I'm stupid. But again, I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and just quit on him. They gave him the job for a reason. Still can't figure that. I haven't figured that one out yet. But I had a Josh Naylor one too, but I think he's just going to be good. I don't really want to like go crazy on that one. I think he's going to be an effective player as well. But I think Jake Bowers will be bold prediction, positive influence on the offense. Positive.
I didn't realize he hit 12 home runs in 2019. He wasn't a good hitter, but I mean, did that and he walked at least double digits. So sure, I could see.
I mean, you look at his projections, and like, there's a 100-point difference between their projected average for him and their projected OBP for him. And I mean, if he can just start getting a few more hits, and I've been saying this for like 2 years now, but if he can, I think he can turn into an effective player. I didn't hate every at bat I saw out of him this spring. I didn't love every at bat either. But yeah, there you go, 25 ding dongs.
There's very few players who like you watch and you feel like you can tell him what to do, but he just watches so many strike threes go by that he just wanted to swing. And maybe he does that, like if it's just a confidence thing and he gets it quickly through the season, then sure, why not?
I mean pitch recognition, I don't know, you know, it could just be one of those things where he's not seeing what he thought, or he's not seeing the ball correctly. Maybe he needs corrective laser surgery or something, or glasses. Maybe it's like a, you know, that sort of situation. But he doesn't want to look like a nerd, so he doesn't know what to do. It's tough.
I wear glasses and I don't look like a nerd, man. Really cool.
Anyway, well, so what's your bold prediction, man?
So mine, I don't have.
This is contentious today. We're really at each other's throats.
Short people are feisty, man. I don't get it. It's just because you're under 6'6". You got to be so.
Can't hear you from up there. What's that? Get your head out of the clouds.
So mine isn't exactly rooted in fact or what's going to happen, but my bold prediction is that Andrés Giménez finishes with a higher WAR than Francisco Lindor this year.
Which... Fucking whoa! I thought I was being bold but stupid, but all right, man. Yeah, let's spin that wheel.
So I think the reasons for that. I got some reasons. I don't think it's exactly a thing that's going to happen, but if it did, I think it happens because one, Andrés Giménez is going to play every single day. I don't think there's another shortstop that plays for Cleveland this year. They did it with, I mean, Lindor came pretty close for a couple of years, and if Giménez is a good enough defender and can at least be an average bat, I think he's there for like 150, 159, 156, or 160 games, somewhere in there. Like, I think he plays a ton this year. He's also a fast guy, so I think he's going to get on base and be a good base runner. I think he's going to be obviously awesome on defense. His projections agree with that too. The biggest thing is his bat, which, I mean, there's nothing looking at him, a stat cast that says he's going to maintain 104 WRC plus, but why not? I'm going to say somehow he's super confident in Cleveland. He's happy where he is. He finishes really well. And then over there in New York, Francisco Lindor doesn't get a contract extension signed. Last year with that looming over him, he was only 102 WRC plus player. I mean, there were, you know, other things looming over 2020, but I'm going to assume part of it was maybe Lindor pressing because of the contract. We saw in Cleveland, he didn't do well under high pressure situations. Chalk that up whatever you want, but there's going to be a lot more of him in New York. Maybe he just doesn't hit as well over there. Like he is, even his projection is like 114 WRC plus. That's something if maybe Andrés Giménez way overperforms him and Lindor way underperforms his, and then they're almost even. Maybe Lindor is probably better on defense, but I don't know. This is one where it's just, I'm going super bold and super optimistic to say that. It's just spring training there. I can't be anything but overly optimistic right now.
There you go.
3 days to go before opening day. So
I believe in you. There you go. That's fair. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm not going to wish for an injury, but maybe, who knows? Lindor has played a ton of games every year. He was injured in 2019, but maybe he's, as an old man at 27 years old, maybe an injury hits him. And then Giménez plays a lot more games and gets more that way. So those good counting stats, Merritt, they're good for that. For
Francisco Lindor is going to be worth 7 wins this year.
Then Andrés Giménez will be worth 9. Whatever, fight me.
Fine, he's going to be great. Yeah, MVP, MV Giménez. There you go.
That's what we'll call him, MV Giménez.
MV Giménez. No, that doesn't make any sense. We'll figure it out.
We'll work it. We'll yeah. Put it in post.
We've got a lot to workshop it. On this one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my bold one. Maybe. I even wrote today, I did the strength and weaknesses of the roster. I said that Giménez is strength, and I don't think they took a huge step back, obviously, because Francisco Lindor is amazing. But I think they got somebody who can be their fill-in guy for now.
No, shortstop, which is what they want. I do agree with you. I mean, I'm not going to say it's sitting here and say he's going to be a 5-win player this year, but I think he's going to be, a 3-ish.
6 at least.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say 5.
7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
It's a good number. 14? I don't know. What did Babe Ruth have in 1927?
I think 3 or 4 is realistic. I'm combining it with a Lindor down year. Is my right. I don't think he's going to outperform. Like if Lindor peaks, continues to peak, then he doesn't pass him. But I'm part of my bold predictions that Lindor has a down year while Giménez has a great year, and they kind of collide into
25 dingers from a guy who's never shown any real power was crazy. But here I am looking like the same one here. I don't like how this feels.
So yeah, we got two more. Obviously, with the regular season in like 3 days, we're wrapping up our AL Central preview. This week we've got. I think this is the two more interesting ones. The Twins are obviously the better team among like the Royals and Tigers, but I think splitting up into a good team and a bad team, I think we got the more interesting ones this time, the White Sox and Royals. The White Sox, just because of this is finally a team coming out of a long rebuild. They're what the Royals and Tigers are aspiring to be at this point. They haven't won the AL Central since 2012. Or no, they haven't finished better than the third since 2012. They last won the division in 2008. They got it to a really great start last year. They were best in the AL through 48 games, and then they went 3-9 in the last 12 and finished third in the AL Central, which these numbers are always going to be wild to me. That 60 games is such a weird thing. Like,
yeah.
That's a blip any other time. But this year, that was their whole story. They were the best team in baseball through 48 games, 12 games, sunk their season, and made them into the wild card where they were swept by the A's. This is a long rebuild that's finally ending. Last year, of course, we saw that it finally did come basically to a close. They got it through the draft. They traded. They got Eloy Jimenez and Yon Mankata at some different points. They also, of course, traded Fernando Tatis Jr. for James Shields, which was probably the worst thing about the rebuild coming out. But they've come out of it pretty well. They have Luis Robert, who, according to that MLB radio network ad, is constantly telling me that he's going to be the next Mike Trout. So I'm glad to keep hearing that every single day.
I haven't heard that in a while, huh?
Which, I mean, it's true. He was super good last year. I think he's going to be good this year. I'm not too concerned about his drop-off at the end. But
I mean, he fell off a cliff, if we're being honest. He absolutely collapsed towards the end. I mean, you look at where he was for the full year last year. It was, you know, fine. But he was on pace for just an absolutely insane season. Like,
yeah, not everybody can be a great rookie like Tyler Naquin, you know,
of his first year. So. Well put, Matthew. Well put indeed, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be an interesting offensive team. They did acquire Lance Lynn and Liam Hendricks this year. They lost Alex Colomé, which was a weird one that they lost him and then signed Liam Hendricks. So, but yeah, I think they'll be a decent team. They don't have Edwin Encarnacion, but he was bad last year anyway. They lost a handful of relievers. They're mostly the same team they had last year with, obviously, Luis Robert hopefully not tanking, but also Eloy Jimenez, who should not be a left fielder probably at this point. He injured himself going over a wall. He could have, stretched his arm over the wall and injured himself that way. So he's out 5 to 6 months.
Too strong.
Too damn strong. They're going to bring in Andrew Vaughn, who hasn't played above high A, to be their left fielder, which is wild.
Well, I was going to say, he's the number one prospect. And his bat will play in some way. I guess he, just like Jimenez, he cannot play the field, unfortunately. They have this massive backlog of all bat, no glove dudes. But I guess when you have Luis Robert in center field, it doesn't really matter who you put in the corners at this point. Case in point, they're going to try and put
Adam Eaton right in the other corner. So. It's going to be an ugly outfield. But
yeah, it's going to
be the same as the Twins, right? I think you even said the same thing last year. They have a string of guys who can't play defense, but they beat the hell out of the ball and out in the outfield.
And to your point with that outfield, of course, what's his name is also a good outfielder, the right fielder, the villain.
Baron Von Max Kepler.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out when the rebuild, just as you mentioned, is like when the rebuild effectively started with this team. Because, like, Jose Abreu, they signed in October 2013, obviously. And then they traded for Mankata in 2016.
By 2016, they were already deep into it, right? Like, they were already a terrible team.
Yeah, but they were a terrible team in 2013 as well, kind of. Like, they were just kind of shitty for a long time because they're trying to do the Stars and Scrubs thing. But then they were just very, very bad because, you know, like, Nick Madrigal was a fourth overall pick. They drafted third overall in 2019. That's when they got Andrew Vaughn. They got Zach Collins even with the 10th pick in 2016. So yeah, they were just kind of shitty for a long. They didn't go to the depths. I don't think is what it was. Like the Astros did or something like that. Did they even lose 100 games at any point? I don't remember if they did or not.
I don't think so.
They're always kind of, I mean, I guess if you're drafting fourth or third overall, you probably did.
They did once. So in the last. So since 1948, they've lost 100 games twice, it looks like.
Cleveland's like that, too, is a thing. Like when they, quote-unquote, rebuilt after the Sizemore era, they just kind of swung down a bit and then came right back. It's just the White Sox, I guess, lucked out on a few draft picks. I mean, you got guys like Madrigal, who's I find a joy to watch, honestly. He's just going to just beat you to death with singles. You got guys like Robert, obviously, who's just an absolute mutant. Tim Anderson, we didn't even bring him up. He was a first-round pick back in 2013. There's just so many guys in this, and it's so hard for me to convince myself that they're definitely the front runners in any kind of division because Tim Anderson's so BABIP heavy, and so is like Yoan Moncada and Nick Madrigal as well. But the fact is, like, Nick Madrigal doesn't have any batted ball profile at all. It's everywhere, and Tim Anderson hits the ball very hard on a line all the time. And Yoan Moncada, same thing. And Luis Robert is strong as an ox. So. I mean, they're going to produce offensively, even losing, Eloy Jimenez. But it is exciting to see them bring in Andrew Vaughn already. Like, it's, I don't know. This is the exciting part of a rebuild, right? Where they're like, all the fun and shine is still on, and they still have the fun old dude in Jose Abreu, and also Yasmani Grandal is continuing to be underrated. And
oh, yeah, I forgot about Grandal.
Yeah, and then they have a bullpen that just throws 10 million miles an hour, all of them. They're all just freaks of nature. Like, Liam Hendricks is, like, one of the least good arms in the bullpen somehow. It's absolutely insane. Guys like Garrett Crochet and Cody Hoyer. That was butchered.
That was good.
Thanks, man. But they just throw so hard, and they have Liam Hendricks backing everything up. Like, the fact that Garrett Crochet can just come out at any time and just gas you for 104 miles an hour, whatever the hell it is. They're a troubling team to look at. You wonder if they are a year early. I don't know. I mean, you look at the rotation too, though. Giolito, Keiko, Lynn, Cease, Rodon. It definitely falls off a cliff after Lynn, I guess.
I mean, Michael Kopech, too, if he comes back. I mean, he's been pitching like 2 years, but if he comes back and is a star, I think they're starting him in the bullpen, but I'd assume at some point he's got to make his way back to rotation.
Dylan Cease is the kind of guy who, like, at the height of Cleveland bringing in random pitchers and turning them into gold, I was like, get him somehow. Like, I just seeing him the last couple of years, I'm like, God damn, he throws so fucking hard. Like, wow. And I just, his only problem is just, it seems like it was like location and like just any kind of control at all. But it seems like every time he pitches it, he just strikes everyone out for the first four innings and gives up like 7 runs in the fifth. And I don't know, Lance Lynn's another one where he's I don't know, he's built like a softball player and he keeps on getting outs constantly without fail. It's very strange pitcher to watch.
I love pitchers like that, though. Like him and I guess Bartolo Colon, you can count. Like Mark Burley was another one who's just this big dude. He just looks like he just carries barrels for a life or for a living. Like you can tell he's fit. They're obviously athletes, but they're like just big barrel chested dudes who just throw the ball and sweat a lot.
There's some pictures of Lance Lynn where he is just moist. Just like that guy looks like he is too hot. Again, it was in Texas, so it was 104 degrees on the field. But then like Dallas Keuchel, I've hated ever since he won a Cy Young, just because the damn sinker would always just dot the corner. Just dude.
Oh yeah, he's infuriating to watch and play against because when you get contact, he's just on the ground.
Ugh, goddamn. And then Giolito, who is overrated.
First of all, Keuchel, if he's good again, it's going to be. It's not a terrible rotation. I think
it's better
than the Twins, maybe. I think Lucas Giolito is very much not overrated and actually very good and probably going to win the Cy Young.
I think he's good. I just don't think he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher. I'll be quite honest with you. I know he eats Cleveland alive, but then like
change ups.
It's infuriating. I just
I don't know how Ty Van Berkel had his job after that interview. Like halfway through the interview, I would have just fired him.
Wait a minute, what did you just say? All change? You're fired. Like, I don't even exist. Oh no.
Like, how does a pitcher just say that and you're just fine with what you have going out there? Like, nobody adjusts to a changeup. And if he knows it and he's doing it, obviously, I think somebody in Cleveland has to notice that. Just throwing changeup and nobody can hit him. And it's working that well. Like, at that point, he's just throwing slow pitches and nobody can touch him. But
like, I don't think he's the seventh best pitcher in baseball or in the American League.
Yeah, he's the fifth, so.
What?
No, he's up there though. He's so good.
I think he's very good. I just don't think he's as good as Shane Bieber. I think he's a step behind Shane Bieber or Jacob DeGrom or what's his name over in New York City.
Corey Kluber.
No, I'd say he's probably as good as Corey Kluber is.
You mean Gerrit Cole?
Gerrit Cole, yeah. I could find you a list of 15 pitchers who I think are better than, which is not to say he's bad. If you're one of the 15 best pitchers in the world, you're a goddamn superstar god. It seems like if I were to extract his starts against Cleveland, his ERA would go up by half a run. Like, I swear to God it would.
Probably, but I mean, still got to count it somewhere, I think, right? But
well, I mean, I agree with you. I could say the same thing about lots of guys, but like, I don't know. He was good last year, but not like stupendous. I don't know. I don't think.
I think
maybe I'm a moron again. Maybe I'm just looking at it through a certain kind of glasses. But like
moron glasses,
moron glasses, yeah,
moron colored glasses.
I got these idiot colored glasses on over here.
Zips loves him. I didn't think they were. I mean, they have a 3 ERA. That's a little. Whew,
that's the thing. Like Zips is really into him, and like
it's the strikeouts, I guess. But
I guess, but like everything, like Steamer, not so much. I have it right here anyway, so I'm just gonna look in the Baseball Prospectus annual. Maybe
I wonder if he has the biggest difference between Steamer and Zips. I wonder if it's because Steamer, because the only thing I can see really is that Steamer includes ground balls, and they also think it'll be worse, he'll have worse BABIP luck than Zips thinks.
That's really the only thing. Let's see, full season they give him, let's see, how many wins is what we really care about.
You look at Pecota, right?
Yeah, Pecota.
Yeah. Look, can you find grit? Is grit projected, man?
Yeah, here it is. Zero grit. Oh, no. They gave him a 3.54 ERA with 2.5 warp.
So, like, right in the middle, then.
Yeah, I mean, they call him a very good pitcher. Comps are Jose Barrios, Tyler Molly, and Taijuan Walker. So, you know, I like that one. I like the comp of him being like Jose Barrios, who, again, is a very good pitcher. It's just he was always looked like a guy who was on an ascent, and then he kind of peaked. if all he throws is a goddamn changeup, eventually someone's going to catch on.
Someone's going to watch that video and go, hold on a minute.
Like the fact that it's a high changeup too. Like right. I'm just like, but that's the one that's supposed to go the furthest. I learned from video games. No.
I do think it'll be somewhere like between Zips and Bakota. Not as bad as Steamer and maybe not even as good as Zips has him. Like that's almost a 6 WAR player, which is a crazy projection just based on how conservative.
That is a wild projection. Like, I think he'll be. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll replicate his 2019 as an ace type season. 170. I mean, he'll probably get more because he'll throw out 200 innings or something like that. So we're back up like 5.5 wins, which again, would be fantastic, but not quite Cy Young caliber, I guess.
You know what is also not quite fantastic is the Kansas City Royals, Merritt.
What?
Is
still?
They're not going to be fantastic. They are, like I said, they're not as long, obviously, as the White Sox rebuild is. But I think at first they went down way harder than I think.
They just won a championship like 2 years ago, I thought.
Well, I mean, 2050, it's time goes fast. But they sort of stretched out a little more than they probably should have in 2016. As a result, they kind of nosedived like 2 years there. But now they've kind of just they've refused to completely tank, which I think is admirable in a way. I don't know. So we sort of said last week, we started talking about it, I mean, we're going to save it. But my general opinion of the Royals is that I'm glad my team doesn't operate like that. I think Cleveland's basically doing what they do, but better, like not tanking, which is exactly Cleveland's whole plan. The frustration with Cleveland is that they don't also add free agents. But the Royals are just trying to do the same thing, just in a worse way. But the fact that they're trying it, I think, is good for baseball overall. Like, they're signing these guys like Carlos Santana. They're acquiring Andrew Benintendi. We need these teams doing different things. Like, I want more teams. They are what Rob Manfred wants you to believe every team does. Like, if they're on an outside chance that they're going to go out and just grab these big free agents and make the last tiny jump to get into the playoffs. But that's not what happens. It's teams are more like Cleveland, where they are a playoff team or pretty close, and what they're going to do is trim down to do the least amount of they can, spend the least amount of money they can to get in the playoffs, which is sort of what the opposite of the Royals are doing, which is kind of, it's admirable in its own weird way. I don't think it's a way to necessarily win. I don't know if this is going to lead into a World Series or even a winning season, but the fact that they went out and got Carlos Santana when they could have just added a bunch of non-roster guys. They could have got this Jake Bowers guy from Cleveland when he gets DFA. They could have just waited for that. But they went out and signed Santana like right away in the offseason when we didn't know what the market was going to be. So they weren't just like waiting to see who was cheaper, which again, maybe it would have been smarter to do that and get a deal on a first baseman instead of Santana. But they just got their guy and they're trying to do their thing. They don't want to completely tank. And getting Andrew Benintendi was also really interesting. It's just because of what they are. I don't know if it's they did it for the smart reason that maybe he can bounce back and they have him control, or they just saw this guy that was out there and available and they know him. So they wanted him and they wanted to bring him in. It's hard to tell with the Royals what they're actually doing, which is again, kind of fun because every other team operates essentially the same way. Either they're all with the same mindset, just with more or less money at this point, which is kind of boring to watch, but the Royals are their own weird little thing out there.
The majority, I think at this point, of baseball teams are owned by private equity guys. It seems like, right. Or that's sort of a person, right? Finance types, right? Who, to your point, want to carve everything down to the rawest efficiencies so they can get they can maximize the return while minimizing the cost, I suppose.
Right.
That makes sense, right?
Oh, so they're just min-maxing everything, yeah.
Right, exactly. John Sherman, who owns the Royals now, is an energy guy. So he's a different breed of businessman. I don't think he's kind of an oil man, per se. Which would be too bad. I've loved a good oil man. But I'm wondering if that has something to do with it, where he's, you know, being an energy guy, he's big into splashy purchases and flashing and dashing. And so that's why he wants to do this. He wants things to happen now. He doesn't want to sit and hope for things in the future. I don't know. He just wants things to go boom for him. Yeah, there we go.
And having like Dayton Moore is the perfect combination for him, because if he had like a Chris Antonetti, I'm assuming like Antonetti could convince him that he can do it cheaper. Like he knows how Antonetti can do it, and like building up your farm system, which is way cheaper than getting Carlos Santana as a 35-year-old. But
I do think that if you gave Chris Antonetti money, and we have an example of this in
the Dodgers,
in the Dodgers, where they gave what's his name money and he created a fucking Death Star.
Yeah, because I mean, everybody likes to say that you just have money and you win, but then there's also the Phillies who have a ton of money and don't win. And
exactly,
I mean, the Padres at this point, they've spent a bunch of money and they still might not win. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be great because they've just been kind of
They're still the second best team in their own division, right? So, so because of the aforementioned Death Star, so you know,
maybe you've heard of it, the Death Star.
Yeah, have you seen that over there? I will be honest with you. I think this Royals team is going to be really irritating all year. They're back to their old ways. You know what I mean? Like, you look at the lineup, and I don't hate it, I guess. Partly because I think Andrew Benintendi is better than he actually is. I think he made a lot of hay hitting balls off the wall in, in Boston. And now that he's hitting in the largest outfield in all of baseball, it's going to be a bit different for him. I imagine Adalberto Mondesi to be a better player than he actually has ever demonstrated, just because his physical tools are so cool still, and he's still 25. So, you know, everyone loves Carlos Santana. Salvador Perez is, the oldest 30-year-old on earth. Jorge Soler is strong as shit. Hunter Dozier, in a video game once, I hit 45 home runs with him in a season. So in my head, he's better than he actually is. But it's all these guys who I'm like, oh yeah, these guys are pretty good. And then I look at their stats, like, these guys aren't very good at all. But they're pesky, I guess.
Which, anyway, that feels like how the Royals are building their team too. It's like, all these guys, they look good. Let's just get them. Fuck them. Yeah, get them in.
You know what? It's to your point earlier. Right? It's definitely the build of a team from like 20 years ago. Right. This is very much like an early 2000s, 90s. You know what? I'll even go so far as to say this is a very 1980s sort of a team where like. Nothing here tells a story of like looking at anything advanced. Like they like Carlos Santana because, well, look how well he hit against us. Let's get him. Salvador Perez, they love him not because of anything advanced, but because he's the size of a barn.
That's a loyalty thing too. That's another '80s thing. They're loyal to him. Outscored exactly. And they kept forever, even though he was just god awful for 6 years.
I mean, Whit Merrifield wins batting titles. Andrew Benintendi looks like he should win batting titles. And he's like, oh, we got him from Boston. He's the next Dustin Pedroia. Look at him over there. Mondesi, again, fast as hell.
Michael Soler, A. Taylor strong has as a shit. Very baseball name.
Yeah, Michael A. Taylor. Yeah, him. Look at him. You know what? He won a championship. And so we need to get that championship mentality. Same thing with Benintendi. And then you look at their rotation, which is just dog shit. And so it's, you know, very much a bunch of sinker ballers. Honestly, I respect this team. I respect this team more than any other team in the entire division, including Cleveland, because they're doing something. What it is bad, but it's neat at least. And you know what it could be? In all honesty, Matt, is a stealth tank. This rotation is really bad. Like, it's the best pitcher might be. I mean, I guess they're hoping that Brady Singer finally turns into something. He was a first round pick. Mike Minor. They have two first-round picks in the starting rotation. Mike Minor is probably going to fall apart again. Brad Keller, I don't know. He's only 25. I swear to God, he's 37 years old.
He's been around forever, it just seems like, yeah.
The fact that Danny Duffy's 32 blows my mind. I swear he's still 22 years old. So it's a very strange thing for me there. And then you look at the bullpen, and it's like, what? So
not good know. Is, I think, the way it would be described. Like,
I think this team could be a lot of fun to watch, and so they'll get butts in seats, and then they'll just lose every single game, like, you know, 7-4 or something like that, 5-3 and things like that. It's very much a throwback team and not in any positive way. But yeah, good for them. I love it. Honestly, it's a very cool little team, and it's cute. You'll get their top prospects, and there's nothing interesting coming down the pike anytime soon, so... Yeah, this is what we get to deal with. And that's why I think this might be a kind of a stealth tank here. And they could pull it off, quite honestly. This might be finally the year it happens where they trade Whit Merrifield, although at this point he's 32. So
yeah, I'm off that get him a Cleveland train that I was on.
Well, guess what? Now is when it's going to happen. Exactly. Dude. Right. It's happening now. He's going to play second base for them next year after they get rid of Cesar Hernandez. It's happening. They're going to trade for Cesar Hernandez because they're like, oh, that guy's a pretty good 1980s baseball type. He gets a lot of doubles. Let's get him.
Oh, he is very much a Royals guy.
It's a perfect one-to-one trade. Wait, what do you mean expiring contract? Ah, crap. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to be a good team, but it'll be. I also wouldn't be surprised if they turn out to be like, if this somehow fucking works and they're not a terrible team. Like, I don't think they're going to pass Cleveland by any means, but if it's a closer race than what is comfortable and they're extremely annoying all year long. And like Brad Keller he was bad last year, but he was really good last year. And I think he could be better than his projections are this year. So I don't know. There's some stuff there they could do and not be terrible. And even if this is a stealth build, like stealth tank, they still signed Carlos Santana for a bunch of money, and I will always love a team that does that.
Oh, 100%. Carlos Santana. Like, no, it's totally cool. Yeah. I mean, yeah,
the, baseball needs somebody to pick up these players like him, who are these aging guys who can still be good and do something for somebody, because he probably necessarily wouldn't start for like a team with World Series aspirations, and most teams that are tanking aren't going to pay him what he's worth. So he's one of those guys these past couple off seasons who've been stuck in the middle. I feel like there weren't as many of them this year. I don't know if there just weren't that many same type of players, or teams are more willing to get these guys. But I think we're kind of coming down to the side of the hill of ruthless efficiency. Like, there is some teams that are starting to realize a little bit, like, it's all right to overspend a tiny bit. Like, maybe you can, you know, get a good guy once in a while, if he's not, if you have to overpay for him a little bit. But I just feel like there were less guys caught in the middle this year, which I think is good. And Santana was one of those guys where, like, 2 years ago, he probably still wouldn't be signed because he'd want $8 million a year and he wouldn't get it. And then we'd just be sitting and waiting. But thanks to the Royals, he got the contract this year, and they're still not going to be good, which is good for me as a fan of Cleveland and watching the Royals, because when they were good, they were the most annoying team by far. Just because of all their,
once again, yeah,
their slappy hits, their bullpen. It was a miserable experience to watch, but I'm glad they exist is basically the gist of it. I don't want them to be my team. I'm glad. I always feel the need to caveat when I'm complimenting the Royals that it's not like a slight against Cleveland, that I wish Cleveland was doing this and signing these guys who probably aren't good and giving you a bunch of money. I'm glad a team is doing it. I'm glad Cleveland is smarter about how they avoid tanking. I just wish Cleveland would do the next step, which is to pay money to somebody who is better, like George Springer or something. But in lieu of that, I'm glad the Royals are existing and doing this weird shit that they're doing. So
they had a 433 winning percentage last year, which is 70 wins. And in my head, I was like, these guys probably top out at about 75 wins. Because have they done anything to get better than last year? I don't think so, really. Their bullpen's got a little bit older, I guess. They don't have any – goddamn. Oof. But again, got to respect them. And to your point about Carlos Santana, too, you know, it's like my dad always complains about – well, he doesn't complain about the DH. He doesn't mind the DH. But he's like, when the DH came in, it was a chance for older dudes who everyone loved to continue to play without playing the position. Then we started getting young DHs. And now we don't have a place for these guys like Carlos Santana quite so much anymore. So they all just like go overseas or whatever, play there, which sucks. But, yeah, like you said, Carlos Santana's there now. And, I mean, will he continue to beat the hell? It's one of those things where, was he hitting well at Kauffman Stadium because he liked hitting at Kauffman Stadium? Or was it because he was facing the Royals? It's one of those situations. And it's hard to tell, quite honestly.
We'll really find out this year when he's facing Shane Bieber in Kauffman Stadium. So, yeah, some of the pitchers that he'll be facing is some from our poll today. Because on every Monday, we ask everybody on Twitter, sort of just try to get like similar-ish answers. I struggled to find a pitcher because I didn't want to do more than one on a team. The question was, which of these AL Central pitchers would have lowest ERA? I did Zach Plesac, Lucas Giolito, Kenta Maeda, and Matthew Boyd with a question mark, because I don't know. What Tigers pitcher do you put in that group? What Royals pitcher do you put in that group? There really isn't one. We omitted Shane Bieber because I think he'd win by a mile, because one, we're a Cleveland slate, and two, I think he's the best pitcher by a mile. But I think this is a decent group. The Plesac, Giolito, and Maeda, at least. And then your chaos vote for Matthew Boyd.
Might be the only one.
Yeah, Lucas Giolito won with 38% of the vote. Kenta Maeda was second with 34%, and Zach Plesac was third with 25%. That might be a perception thing because Giolito and Maeda are their staff aces and Plesac is just the second or third guy. But I can see Plesac maybe beating out one of them. I don't think this order is bad or wrong necessarily, because I think Giolito and Maeda are really good. But I could see Plesac beating out Maeda, or if Giolito is on the lower end of his projection spectrum, maybe Plesac's better than all these guys, but I think he's going to be better than Matthew Boyd, at least. I would hope.
I mean, so like I was looking at, I hate to circle back about my comments earlier with Lucas Giolito, but in 2019, him and Shane Bieber were like a coin flip of a pitcher, like either or, right? And Shane Bieber just made a jump. And I haven't read anything anywhere saying Giolito has made a similar adjustment or leap in his own repertoire as far as adding pitches and things like that, so.
No, his big change was before 2019 when he had the arm angle change. So I think his big shift is already done. I don't imagine he makes another huge jump.
Again, he's still going to be a 5.5 win pitcher. As far as ERA, though, I think it'll probably be Maeda, just because I'll be honest with you. The defense, I think, on the Twins is better, just in terms of infield defense specifically.
That's a good point.
Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada, who's our third baseman now? Oh, Yoan Moncada, training Nick Madrigal. I don't know. I think defensively that he'll benefit some. Plus, he plays in a bigger park. Like, ERA is such a thing that's impacted. Matt, of course, asked a silly question because he used a broken old stat. We don't care about anymore. His stats nerds, everyone.
Should have done wins and grit.
You should have wins and grit, small I. Ex-grit. And that's the thing about Maeda, though, is too, he had quite an outlier year last year. I mean, his ERA was fully, a rung lower than his career average. He never had an ERA lower than 3.48 prior to that, and that was in 2016 when he was 28 years old. It's hard to lean away from him just because of his track record, but at the same time, Giolito is probably, I mean, you can lock him in for like a 3.40 ERA probably. It's with Maeda. He's pitched more than 153 innings once, and that was, again, back in 2016. Since then, he's been a 150-inning guy. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer because is he going to be a 2019 Maeda, or is he going to be 2020 Maeda? Because he was sprinting last year, and he was marathoning in 2019. So I'd probably end up actually having to probably go Giolito, unless Plesac wasn't a ruse. Because didn't he have like a 2.34 ERA last year?
Oh, he was super good last year. I don't think he's going to be that good again.
I don't think he's pretty good, but
he was ridiculously good last year. And
I know he's adding stuff, and I know that his curveball tunnels with his fastball a little bit better now. And
yeah, but he walked six guys all of last year in 55 innings. I don't think that happens again.
I agree.
That's a sub one per nine. So I think it'll be good. And the tunneling, I think, is super important for him. And I think if anybody can make the stretch from 55 innings to closer to 200, it's him, just because of how athletic he is. And
yeah, bloodlines.
And I didn't realize he's never pitched like that many innings in the minors. He's jumped between levels. I'm trying to add them real quick in my head. I guess the highest is like 140 in 2018 between high A and double A. So he's never pitched
144.2. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like a massive number of innings. Cause even in 2019, he came up kind of late and he was 115. So, yeah, he's so athletic anyway. I'm not really concerned about it. I just don't know if he'll make 200. But
I didn't know we went to college. I'm assuming we went to Vanderbilt because all pitchers go to Vanderbilt these days.
Especially if you're the son of or related to a major leaguer, you go.
That's what I was exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Thank you.
If you're Jack Leiter and you go to.
I mean, again, we're looking at a guy who threw 115 in 2019, 3.81 ERA. Definitely deflated, I guess, by a lot of luck with his strikeout rate jumping like it did. I have no reason to think it won't hold, right? I mean, strikeout rates are going up anyway, and I don't know. I think he could still keep his ERA around what his career average is right now, is his 3.32. I think that's a very realistic number, just really if you look at his fielding independent pitching from last year as well, which was 3.39, which is, again, more than a run higher than his ERA. But I guess the answer would probably have to be Giolito. But I don't think it's going to be. So, take that, everyone.
There you go.
Why do I say that? No good reason. I'm here to give you bad answers.
Matthew Boyd, a question mark. All right, Merritt, that's going to do it for us this week. If you haven't already, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Even when we get the new name change, it's still the same feed. I'm just changing the name and the pictures over. But this is our last episode of Let's Talk Tribe. I think I'm going to keep the numbering. We've earned that, Merritt. We don't need to drop. We're still 172 of whatever we're going to be in the next week. So follow us on Twitter. At Let's Go Tribe. Well, yeah, but by the time you listen to this, you can still follow us. Let's Go Tribe. It'll be different tonight when you listen to this. But follow me, Matt, RLY. Follow Merritt at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. And for now, find us at letsgotribe.com. But after that, we will just keep covering baseball at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. So, Merritt, see you next week.
I'll be there.
Thanks to T-Mobile for sponsoring this episode and for connecting fans to Major League Baseball like no one else. Right now, T-Mobile customers can score a free subscription to MLB TV when they redeem by April 5th. Where else can you watch tons of games and get access to the largest, fastest 5G network in America? Only with T-Mobile. Start opening week off right. Visit T-Mobile.com/MLB to score your free MLB TV today. Qualifying customers can access the T-Mobile Tuesdays app to sign up for MLB TV. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Awarded fastest 5G by Open Signal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G Experience Report, January 2021. Details at T-Mobile.com.